Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading Everybody by Olivia Lang. But first, book news, and we have two bits of news in the awards season. Mm-hmm. One is
2021 National Book Critics Circle Awards.
That's
the
right.
Winners have been announced.
Yes, and the winner for, I think it's the best fiction, is The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois by
Honoré Fanon Jeffers, maybe.
That's right. And did you say, Annie, that this is a prize that Olivia Lang has won previously?
Yeah. Sorry. So Lonely City was shortlisted for the National Book Critics Circle Award in 2016.
Right. Now, I don't think I've read Lonely City.
Yeah, it's great. It's
which is the one? No, I read The Trip to Echo Springs, yeah, which is about the drunk authors.
Yes.
And which one was
so
Lonely City?
She moves to New York for a relationship, which immediately breaks down, and then she is kind of stuck in this apartment. She's sold up her whole life in London and tries to make a go of it. And so then she looks at authors who have lived in New York and been very lonely or worked with experiences of loneliness in their artwork.
Right.
So yeah,
she's very good at finding a theme working authors and figures from history into it, which we will come to in a moment. Our other book news is the Women's Prize long list for 2022 has been announced, and this is a bit belated because Annie and I have been off in isolation. Well, Annie has. So we are coming to this now, but while we've been away, there's been a lot of awards news. So the Women's Prize long list is Build Your House Around My Body by Violet Cooper Smith. And that is about two Vietnamese women who go missing, one in 1986 and one in 2011, I think it is. And it's been described as a fever dream.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I don't know. The first part is so good. Her writing is amazing.
Okay.
And it really sags in the middle. I did finish it in the end. And the history is really fascinating, but I think there's too many threads and they're not woven together well enough for my liking. Anyway.
There's that one. Careless by Kirsty Capes, which is Bess finds out that she's pregnant, and then I think Bess is possibly, I think she's a teenager and she's in the care system in the UK. I think Pandora Sykes described it as astonishing, or she raved about it.
It sounds really good and it's got a good cover.
It does have a good cover. So that one's interesting. Creatures of Passage by Morawa Yejidi, which is set in 1977 Washington and involves ghosts.
Oh, I know nothing about that one. I don't know if it's been published.
That could
in
be
Australia
one for
yet.
You, Annie.
Okay.
You like ghosts,
I do love
don't
ghosts.
You? Okay. So Annie might do Creatures of Passage. Flamingo by Rachel Elliott, which is a sort of two families. It didn't appeal to me.
It looks very commercial. The cover does.
Well, they sometimes have a mix, don't they,
that's
in
true.
The Women's Prize. It's often they want some accessible sort of books. Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead, which we've read.
We both did that. Yeah.
And that was really good. Salt Lick by Lulu Allison, which is sounds like a dystopian novel narrated by cows.
Oh, wow.
Or involving cows. So I think the landscape's been a little bit decimated and the cows are wandering around.
Wow. Which that sounds more like me. I'm into that.
So that sounds so unlikely for me that I'm almost curious. I think perhaps I would like to give that a go.
Okay.
The Book of Form and Emptiness by Ruth Ozeki.
I didn't like that either.
Okay.
And I love her. So I really persevered with it. And just didn't click for me.
Didn't click. And then The Bread the Devil Need by Lisa Allen Agostini, which has a great cover and is set in Trinidad and has a domestic abuse storyline, but it's a woman who looks fantastic, works in a shop, seems to have her life together, but there's a whole story going on behind the scenes. Mm. So that sounds interesting and has a very strong cover. The Exhibitionist by Charlotte Mendelssohn, which is sort of a family saga and there's an art theme. So he's an artist. His wife is also an artist, but she's had to take a back seat. And I almost read the blurb and went, oh, I just
not
don't
this
know.
Again.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. But I think she's very highly regarded, Charlotte Mendelssohn. I'm sure she does it. And again, it's got a beautiful cover. The Final Revival of Opal and Nev by Dawnie Walton. which I don't know about.
Well, that's a little – it's a music story set in, I think, the 70s. And so it reminded me a bit of Daisy Jones and the Six. But I don't know – I don't think it's told in that kind of oral history. But, yeah, it sounded good.
Mm, okay. And The Island of Missing Trees by Elif Shafak, which I think someone – it might have been Simon Savage, but someone has said that's the one to beat at the moment. Mm. That is a real women's prize sort of book, I think. Yep, and she'd be a very worthy winner. It's a beautiful book. The Paper Palace by Miranda Cowley Heller.
Which has been a Reese's Book Club pick and is about a woman who goes swimming at their country house or and maybe doesn't return.
Right.
So it's a bit of a thriller mystery type book, which is interesting for this kind of prize.
All right. We could do that one. That did get a bit of buzz last year, I remember. Mm-hmm. The Sentence by Louise Erdrich.
Yes. That and The Island of Missing Trees would be my two top picks.
They're my two favourites. Well, as in I've only read three, but they're my two favourites. This One Sky Day by Leonie Ross.
Yeah.
Leonie Ross.
So she is a British Jamaican writer. This sounds amazing. It's a brick and it's set over one day in Jamaica in a small town. There's a marriage or a relationship between two people that's going to go quite wrong. It'll be quite magical realism-y and I would be keen to read this.
I'm very keen to read it, although...
Cool. We can do it.
The magical realism is
maybe
is
puts
a
you
query,
off a little bit.
Just putting a little asterisk there, but definitely keen to read it.
It looks really
and
lush.
Two that I nearly forgot, but two Australian authors or Antipodes authors. One is Remote Sympathy by Catherine Chidgey, which has been described on the blurb, it says powerful and disturbing and moving. And that sort of blurb doesn't necessarily grab me, but sometimes they're the best books. But it's, I think, set in Germany.
Yeah, and where's she from?
I thought New Zealand, but am I getting that wrong?
Maybe
anyway.
Because it's published by Europa.
There you go. And Sorrow and Bliss by Meg Mason.
Your face.
I really enjoyed that book. And yet I'm not, it's not a book that I... loved.
Can champion.
No. I don't know why that is. So many people love it. So that would be another. I think that would make the shortlist. What do
You'd
you
think?
You'd
think so. It's hard to know because I've only read a third of them and I know so little about the others.
So on to our book of the week, Everybody by Olivia Lang.
Yes, crowd favourite, Olivia Lang. So she is a British writer and cultural critic. She's written four books of non-fiction for which she won the Wyndham Campbell Prize in 2018. And she's also got a collection of essays called Funny Weather. And then she wrote a novel in 2018, which she wrote over about six fevered weeks, which we read and loved, called Crudo. And that won the James Tate Black Memorial Prize. But she ended up dividing the £10,000 prize between her and the other shortlisted authors, if you remember, because she has a problem with the kind of segregation of one winner and she doesn't think that that's necessarily good for art or literature. So she was very fair and divided it between her fellow shortlistees, which was really interesting to see. So she was for a little while the books or the deputy books editor at The Guardian, and she has worked as a journalist and writer for a long time. And the Financial Times said that Lang's gift for weaving together big ideas with lyrical prose sets her alongside the likes of Arundhati Roy, John Berger and James Baldwin. So that's a pretty big shout. So this book, Everybody, is her fourth book of nonfiction, and she does an interesting job of blending together memoir, travel writing, biography, cultural commentary, all in the one book, and even, you know, even in the one chapter or in the same paragraph, she can put these things all together in a line and make you feel really... She takes you with her, I think, is her great skill. A little bit like Rebecca Solnit, she can make really intelligent, complex ideas very accessible to the layperson and makes you feel like, oh, I'm having really intelligent thoughts, but it's kind of like, no, you've done all the work and I'm just basking
exactly.
in it.
Exactly.
So it's on one hand the biography of Wilhelm Reich, who was a psychoanalyst from the 1920s. He was a student of Freud and ended up inventing a type of psychoanalysis called body psychotherapy, which it sounds a little bit like Reiki meets talk therapy. And then she jumps off from there and talks about her own experience of growing up in same-sex family in the 80s under Thatcher and the experience of knowing that her body was incredibly vulnerable but also incredibly politically powerful from getting involved with rallies and whatnot. And then she talks about a whole bunch of different incredible artists and writers and thinkers. So Susan Sontag.
Andrea Dworkin.
Andrea Dworkin, Malcolm X, Nina Simone, all manner of cultural figures. So I think the thesis of the book for me was kind of about looking at the ways in which the body is the source of so much power but also so much vulnerability, and wondering whether sexual freedom and freedom of expression of the body is what is at the base of all of our problems in society, and whether we're going forward or backwards on that count. What did you think?
Well, I had mixed feelings because I love Olivia Lang, so I love her writing, all the things you describe about how she is accessible but has such a beautiful writing style, and so it's a pleasure just to read her sentences, but also that she does make you feel intelligent by osmosis or by association. Mm-hmm. And I love the way her mind works and the way she synthesizes ideas and will grab something from Wilhelm Reich's life and Freud and then look at Andrea Dworkin and sort of draw a line between them and bring you on this sort of idea that is really interesting. It's always interesting. And even the way, what I love about her mini biographies, and she did this in her, The Trip to Echo Springs, which I've read, and probably in some of her other nonfiction, she does those mini biographies. But no, what the other thing I love about those mini biographies is that she will take those figures from history that have been written about before, but she brings a feminist lens to it, and or as well as just her own originality of thought to it. So it's really fresh. So I love that about her writing, and it's invigorating. I think we used that word when we talked about Crudo well. It's really stimulating and invigorating, and you just, you know, enjoy reading it. And you're always learning something. And so I really liked that. And this was never not it was always interesting. So, you know, she can't write a boring sentence and so on. But it just didn't interest me as much as the Echo Springs book, and Crudo's in a different sort of that's category. Fiction. Yeah. That's in a different category. The Echo Springs book was about authors that I was familiar with, even if I haven't read all of their works. So I came to it then learning all these other things about them and also learning about Olivia Lang a little bit, because she always is happy to put in personal experiences as well. Whereas this one, I'm just not as familiar with those, the figures that she talks about in this one. Some more than others, I suppose, and Reich being the main one, of course. And for whatever reason, learning about his form of psychotherapy just wasn't something I really felt that interested in. And the sort of trying to tie it all together with the body didn't, as you were saying, you managed to find a thesis in all of it, and because you do need to feel like there's a thread. So Echo Springs, the thread was writers and alcohol and their relationship, and it's very clear.
And I
so
can you, see that you this know, is less focused, because in each of her other books she takes a journey, and it's her personal story that guides the narrative of who she's investigating and who she's talking about. So like in Trip to Echo Springs, she goes on the journey and visits each of those writers' houses across America. And at the same time, I think she's recovering from a relationship breakdown or, you know, she's having her own but issues as she's going across.
It's sort of that gives it a structure.
Exactly. Whereas this, I think, is a bit more broad ranging. And I actually quite liked how in each chapter it's more about a theme rather than a person.
Yes.
Or one work of art, as her previous novels have been, her previous works have been. And I thought that gave it a bigger cohesion. And I guess it's more academic than perhaps some of her other works as well. Like it's pushing forward a less easily tangible idea. And I quite liked that. And I liked that there weren't any easy answers, you know. Like I don't think she comes down on the side of Wilhelm Reich entirely. He had quite a controversial career, ended up in jail in the 50s because he invented this orgone accumulator that he thought was going to be the cure for all mental illness, which is just basically putting you in a box on your own with a little window and letting your energies flow. So he kind of turned to quackery, but I did like the line that she drew between his treatment in Nazi Germany, and the other psychoanalysts refused to denounce Hitler. And he was kind of like, this guy is crazy and we need to take a stand against him. And because of that, he was pushed out of the academy, pushed out of Germany, ended up having to go to the US. And that really was a break in his psyche. It ruined his whole life. And I liked the line between his lofty ideals as a younger man and then his fall from grace, and the way that there were lots of ideas being thrown around in all of those times of his life, but they just got more and more removed from reality. Yeah, I liked him as a character. So I think that was fascinating for me. Whereas
He didn't do much for me, but I love her take on it though. She can make anything interesting, but she did sort of try to pull the theme together. So you had the body and the illness, you know, your experience of your body via illness. Mm-hmm. So she had Susan Sontag
and Kathy Acker.
And Kathy Acker, their experience of illness. And then you have the body as a freedom and protest.
Yeah, the body as a woman, the black body.
And so on. But I don't think it was, for me, strongly and tightly done enough to feel like I was driving forward, but
you knew I didn't know where I was going.
Mm-hmm. So I sort of stopped reading about halfway through. Yeah, I didn't feel like I needed to keep picking it up because I guess, you know, why do you keep picking it up? Why do you want to keep reading? Mm. Well, if you're interested in Reich, you want to keep seeing what happens to him, which I didn't. Mm. And I did, you know, I was sort of interested in what's she going to say about Nina Simone. So I dipped into that chapter, but it didn't. I needed more of a context otherwise it's just, here's something interesting about Nina Simone and let's see if I can make that to do with the body, or, you know, it didn't quite work for me. But, you know, Jason at Imprints said it was his best nonfiction book of last year.
Yeah, it was one of mine for sure.
And a lot of people have raved about it. So
I don't know whether it was what I was reading at the time or if it's one of those books that make you see all the links in your outside world. But I remember, like, I picked it back up again last night just to flick through it to remind myself, because I read it months ago, and immediately I remembered that I was reading Colm Tóibín's The Magician, because the Manns are mentioned in this, Klaus Mann in particular and Christopher Isherwood, living in kind of pre-Nazi, like 1938 Berlin, and this kind of sexual freedom that was resounding. And then the Nina Simone sections were connecting with this other podcast that I was listening to, which was by Patrick Radden Keefe, but it's the one about whether the CIA had infiltrated Russia with this song. And Nina Simone's mentioned in that too, because she really got treated badly, probably got manipulated by the CIA, got dropped off in Africa as a kind of emissary from the US saying like, hey, look at all of our wonderful treatment of black people. And she felt really used and ended up fleeing and never returned to the US. And so there were a lot of connections that kind of made me feel like, oh, this book is a book that talks to everything, you know? Like, well, it's a really interconnected world.
It is, and that's exactly, it felt for me too much that it was everything and not, so I needed something to kind of grip onto and to see a narrative focus, and it was too broad for me. But that's, again,
it's not necessarily a flaw.
It wasn't necessarily a flaw, and I could probably have just kept reading it, except it, you know, there are other things I want to read that are drawing me back to them, I suppose.
Well, it is one of those books where there's so much research that she's done and so much information that she gives you, you can't possibly hold on to all of it.
Mm.
So that's why, looking back on it, I kind of struggled to pick up what it was even about. Like, I remembered Wilhelm Reich and I remembered some of the ideas, but I couldn't I could remember the feeling that it gave me, but I couldn't remember any of the specific stories that really got to me.
It's almost like a reference book in a way, but so much cooler than most reference books.
And just like a good flash history of the 20th century with a very specific lens, and then you could learn about a little bit about all of these really interesting people, and if you were fascinated by one of them, you could go off and dive into something about them. Like, there was one person, Bayard Rustin, who I had never heard of, and he was a peaceful protester in jail in the 70s. Or maybe even the 60s, like while the civil rights movement was up and coming. And he really developed this whole thing of just don't fight back, just be really peaceful, and was contemporary of Malcolm X, and they were really closely acquainted, and they obviously went down different paths. But yeah, like there's people like that that I'm kind of like, how have I never heard of this person? Maybe it's because I'm not an American, but also I suspect that he doesn't get taught in US schools either.
No.
So yeah.
And that's what's good about Olivia Lang, is she brings a fresh eye and makes you see history differently, which I love. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't love it.
It's mixed, because I do still love her. I love her writing. I'll read anything that, you know, Olivia Lang writes. But I love books like this, and Stefan Zweig did this as well, where they write little biographies in a very conversational way that is you can access, and you learn so much, but it's almost like you're reading, you know, it's not a dry.
No, it's like you're having a chat with a good friend.
Like having a chat.
Have you heard about this person? You're like, no, tell me. Yeah. What's the gossip?
Yeah, so I love that genre, whatever you call it. Yeah. So, yeah, she's so interesting. That was Everybody by Olivia Lang. So best nonfiction book of 2021 or not. We're not... You tell us. You be the judge. Coming up next week, we are reading A Man Named Doll by Jonathan Ames. So we're going into crime. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr. _Annie.
And we will see you next week. Bye for now.